Good evening and welcome to The Big Fight, the show that is young at 21, the oldest running debate show on Indian News Television. I'm Sanket Upadhyay. Well, amid all the political stories that you have seen through the course of the week, where someone's going, someone's coming, someone's leaving a party, an ideology versus redundancy debate, the one issue that needs to be discussed, debated, deliberated upon, and all sorts of things, actioned off, is our COVID-19 plan, our response plan, our vaccination strategy. Now, we all know the Prime Minister announced a rejig as far as this vaccination policy is concerned. The central government has taken greater control. But there are many, many important questions if we are to duck a third wave and also complete the very ambitious vaccination project by the end of this year. Do remember that we have to vaccinate at the pace of 1 crore a day to be able to achieve that target. The big question is, can we do it? How will we do it? Do we have the resources? The Prime Minister set this date on the 21st of June, where India is likely to go into a vaccine overdrive, where the central government would have augmented all its resources, and it will go for a vaccine overdrive. The big question on The Big Fight is, how prepared are we? Let me introduce Dr. N.K. Arora, chairman of the COVID Working Group, member of the NTAGI, National Technical Advisory Group on Immunization. Dr. Arora, thank you so much for joining us. My first question to you is, you must have thought about this, deliberated upon this. So I want to ask you, on the 21st of June, this date that has been set, what's going to change?
I couldn't hear you, your last phrase.
Dr. Arora, can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you well.
Yeah, I'm saying that the Prime Minister has set a date, the 21st of June. I want to ask you, what is going to change from that day on?
In fact, the vaccination should continue and will continue as it is going on. I think the major change which is likely to come is greater availability of vaccine. And we all know about shift from decentralized procurement to centralized procurement. And also now including 18 to 45-year-old also as part of eligible population. I think that is those are the key issues. But I think the benchmark here is that with all recently what we are hearing is that vaccine availability will increase significantly as we move toward the third week and fourth week of June and July onwards, because our major two suppliers of vaccine, Covishield and Covaxin, they are going to they are ramping up their production. And by the next month end or August beginning, they should be producing 10 or 12 crore each. That means anywhere between 20 to 25 crore doses will be available from these two companies only. Mm-hmm. Now, that is a significant improvement or expansion or ramping up from what we were having around 7.5 to 8 crore so far. And that will be the key thing. And the second is infrastructure is already there. We do not have much difficulty in terms of delivering the vaccine. If you remember, in the first and second week of April, when vaccine was opened up for 45 plus, then 75,000 immunization centers were there, including about 7,000-8,000 from private sector. Now, each center can very easily provide 100 doses per day without any difficulty. And that itself makes it 7.5 million or 75 lakh doses. And once the vaccine availability is there, The system has a capacity to have up to 100,000. The government system has capacity to have up to 100,000 immunization center. Even I think last few days it was around 45,000 or something like that. So there is the delivery background is not a problem. In fact, a innovation will come up that 25% private sector is going to do it. Now, private sector is by itself, they had committed in the beginning that they would be able to provide up to 20,000 immunization centers. Mm. Although during last 2.5 or 3 months, maximum were 5,000-6,000 or so. But with smaller hospitals and small nursing homes getting the vaccine, I think this base will also, particularly in urban areas. And rural area can be very well covered because the pediatric immunization background is very good. So that is two things. One is vaccine availability. Second is infrastructure. And this is happening on the platform of COVID. Now, third thing, which is now the most important thing, and the system has very aggressively taken up, is this issue of vaccine acceptance, vaccine demand, and what we are seeing in media, both print as well as visual media, that issues of vaccine acceptance is a very important thing, and all-out effort is being made so that this does not become a stumbling block or bottleneck, because everything is available and people should accept it. And particularly in certain pockets, we know there are hesitancy and those are important issues. Hmm. So that work is already taking place at very big scale, and proactively things are being done for that purpose.
Sure, Dr. Arora,
so these are the three things we feel. Yeah. And so the system is geared anywhere between 75 to 1 crore doses a day without any difficulty, because the way infrastructure is there, that should not be, I don't think there will be any problem for that.
Okay. And if we have that pace of vaccination, hopefully we'll meet our targets as well. Dr. Arora, the problem now that a lot of doctors have also mentioned and many task force members of various states have mentioned is the availability of vaccine, right, whenever it will be available, in a form of a divide, an urban-rural divide. Can you answer how are you going to address this concern? And then there is another divide, which I'll come to later.
So vaccine availability, as I said, the way I have gone around in 2 or 3 states, I was in Uttar Pradesh and Bareilly last week, and Haryana, and then 1 or 2 other states in Meghalaya also. What we have seen that the infrastructure and the preparation in the rural area is not at all a challenge. All PSCs and CSCs are geared to deliver vaccines. The important part is that cold chain, which becomes a challenge or a kind of issue, which how to handle that. That cold chain point is not an issue, and practically all CSCs and PSCs are providing. Now, in routine immunization, outreach clinics are organized. Now, this time, I'm sure you are aware that there is this effort which is called NHCVC. That means Near Home Corona Vaccine Center. Now, this is particularly for rural areas, particularly for those who are elderly, who don't have to walk around. So it is not in every village, but in small clusters of 2 or 3 villages, these clinics will be operating, so that people who cannot be taken for too long or who are frail, there is a scientific definition for frailty, they will be all brought together after they have been identified and given vaccine right in their village or very near their village. So this kind of infrastructure in rural, in fact, I must tell you, the rural infrastructure is better as far as vaccine delivery is concerned than urban. And in urban areas, along with the public sector, I think private sector is going to play a very important role. And we see that they have come forward very proactively and supported the system.
I want to ask this question about the private sector also, because this is also a concern being addressed by many of those task force members, that there is a private sector versus government sector divide also, that many big hospitals are going to corner most of those vaccines allotted for the private sector. And then many small hospitals, which are also part of the private sector, in smaller areas, will not have vaccines. How do you address this?
In fact, you have raised exactly the important question, that how do we really expand? And last 3 months' experience has shown that when this happens, you cannot, and that's why private sector was having anywhere between 2,000 to 5,000 immunization centers, and mostly in mega cities. So you're absolutely right. Now with 25% availability of vaccine in the private sector, so for example, in a very kind of a conservative, let's say 24, 25 crore doses are just administered in a month. So about 6 crore doses will be available for private sector. And private sector, the effort is being made that even small nursing homes with 10, 15 beds also are able to procure small amounts according to them. That is the process.
How?
Just like how other vaccines like pentavalent and other pediatric vaccines, even this vaccine should be available at smaller places.
With all due respect, see, the point is that if these private players or private hospitals are dealing directly with the vaccine manufacturers, and remember, there is a higher cost. So it is but natural for a businessman to sell his product or be more serious about selling his product in bulk at a higher cost to whoever wants to buy it. Now, what chance will a small nursing home have who wants smaller number of doses as opposed to, say, a big hospital who will take a majority of the chunk of these vaccines? How do you bridge this divide?
Yes, the question is, whatever, as a corporate hospital, I will try to take only that much vaccine which I am able to dispense of. An urban population in big cities, there is a limitation. So the amount, just imagine 6 crore was being done for every month for the whole country. Now for private sector alone, that much will be available. So private sector will also be using it only how much, whatever.
There is a reason why I'm asking you this question, Dr. Arora, because many big private hospitals are saying we want to do CSR, corporate social responsibility, which means that whatever vaccine we have, we'll procure and then we'll set up camps in smaller areas. So they've made their desire very clear. They plan to purchase these vaccines much more than what they may need because they want to serve other places also as part of their CSR campaign.
So, Sanket, as you speak, the point you are raising is very important. And as you must have seen during last 4 or 5 months or even last 1.5 years, nothing is cast in stone. As I am sure, to increase the base and foundation of vaccination in private sector, I'm sure things will be done so that even in small urban areas or smallest of nursing homes, people do get access to vaccines in a more comfortable and ready manner as compared to what is happening today.
Okay, Dr. Arora, now we come to the all crucial and important question of vaccine hesitancy. I mean, we see videos coming in from, there was very recently a video sent by our colleague Alok Pandey from Barabanki in Uttar Pradesh, where an elderly lady there's a massive attempt to convince her, to tell her that her neighbors have got the jab, she should also get the jab. How big or a concerted campaign do you think you will require to change this mindset? How big a challenge is this?
This is a problem, but not insurmountable. The reason is, India is one of those rare countries where we broke through the vaccine hesitancy for polio. We broke through the hesitancy due to measles rubella campaign. And I'm sure that experience will be extremely useful. Many of us have been involved very closely. Now, the first important thing is to understand the underlying factors which lead to less demand or hesitancy or reluctance. One of the very important things which has come to light is that particularly in rural areas and even in urban areas, many people do not understand the importance of the disease, the significance of the disease in terms of its severity. Because, and they are correct to a very large extent, that 85% or 80% just have a mild cold and cough and fever and they become all right. Hmm. So they do not foresee any major issue.
Yeah.
But the important point is, the disease is so unpredictable. Who gets a severe disease, who requires hospitalization, and who is likely to die is quite difficult. although age is a factor, comorbidity is a factor, but in younger population, it affects. So I think this is a message, and this myth, the awareness has to be kind of entered into the community on one, number one. Number two, there are a lot of myths and misinformation, and it's sometimes it complains. Again, let me take the example of sterility and the damage it can cause to men and women in all kinds. Now, this, whenever a major campaign of vaccines have taken place in India and in even other parts of the world, these kind of rumors are always there. I'm sure you would remember from polio, from measles, these kind of rumors. And there is a scientific and behavioral science methods to debunk these and systematically try to break these misinformation. Third component, which is equally important, and that is the fear of unknown. And I think that is what you were also talking about, ki kuch ho jayega, hum to nahi lagwayenge, hame pata nahi kya ho jayega. Now, that kind of thing, that 24 crore people have already taken, we also know even health providers were resistant and hesitant to begin with. And yeah, over the time, that has moved on. And similarly, so I have broadly categorized it, these three.
Sure.
And there are others, and there are studies going on across the country, sure, trying to understand the cultural and contextual issues which may help us to understand how to break through vaccine hesitancy. There is a very system, scientific way,
sure,
to address this issue across the country.
Sure. Two quick questions before I let you go, Dr. Arora. Number one is, you know, a statement that came in from Dr. Ashok Seth. He's the chairman of Fortis Escorts. And he said that if this country can conduct general elections, Lok Sabha elections, in one and a half months in various phases, and imagine the number of population which goes to vote, close to 900 million, 90 crore people, then why can't we have, like the Election Commission of India, a Vaccination Commission of India, a VCI, have a centralized body which will take control of the various departments and carry this out like a mission, like an election?
So I do not know whether you're aware, there is a separate immunization division in the ministry, and it almost works like what you're saying. The way you must see, it is almost like a war room. And because India is very used to conducting this pulse polio immunization, I do not know whether you're aware, I will ask you a question and you should answer me.
Sure.
That in one round of pulse polio, how many children are immunized in 1 week? Are you aware of that?
No.
17 crores.
Okay.
So don't be surprised. There is almost like a mission mode system built into the ministry. And many of us have been involved for almost over a decade or so. I am not part of the government, but I know very closely that how it works. And during this pulse polio program, 100,000 outreach centers are organized, sure, and simultaneously drops are put into the mouth of 17 crore children. So it is not as small. So the way it is done, we are already used to it, and therefore immunization will also have to be done. But here there is a difference. When Sanket goes as an adult and when Sanket goes as a child, there is a difference. So adult have to go on themselves, children are brought by their parents. So we are learning that process, because adult immunization on such a large scale has never been done anywhere in the world. So, and particularly in a low and middle income setting where there are cultural issues and other political, yeah, issues also. And
yeah,
I hope that we should be able to do it, but it will be worth watching. We are also trying to see how well we are able to do it.
And that's exactly, these questions are intended to see this positive development unfold right in front of our eyes. Dr. Arora, thank you so much for joining us. It's always great to talk to you. Thank you so much. Let's now go to Dr. Krutika Kupali, medical doctor and infectious disease specialist based in Palo Alto. We also have Dr. Girdhar Gyani, Director General, Association of Healthcare Providers. We also have Dr. Priya Sampatkumar, Chair, Infection of Prevention of Control at Mayo Clinic. Thank you very much to all of you all. Dr. Krutika, I want to begin with you. You see, an inoculation drive as massive as this, the government is hopeful. It's very important to stay positive about this, but it's also equally important to to second guess the possible problems. So I want to ask you, in your wisdom, what do you think are those possible problems that we can encounter, which we can fix right now or start working on right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think one of the largest challenges is going to be the logistics of such a massive vaccination drive. So actually getting the shots into arms of people in and of itself, trying to get people to come out for the vaccines, trying to actually get people to give vaccines. I think that's going to be one of the most challenging problems when you're trying to vaccinate so many people at one time. Likewise, I think really trying to reach the difficult to reach populations, that's also going to be a challenge. Those are challenges that are not unique to India, but I think challenges that have been faced all over the world. And then finally, I think the other thing that really is going to be a challenge is trying to combat some of the misinformation that has been out there. There's misinformation everywhere, and really trying to convince people to get vaccinated. So I think those would be the three things I'd be most worried about, and things that really there need to be contingency plans to think about those things.
All right. Dr. Sampath Kumar, you see, we was just speaking to Dr. N.K. Arora, is the chairman of the COVID working group in India. And he says that we are prepared. We have carried out inoculation drives or vaccination drives in the past also. Our system is geared up. We can go as high as 1 crore doses a day. But the problem, the biggest problem that one faces, especially in rural areas, is vaccine hesitancy. Now, what do you think? Is there any global example that can be followed on how to end this very quickly? Because clearly we can't afford to waste time.
So I think vaccine hesitancy is real and is a problem. But right now, the bigger problem that India has is vaccine availability. So from everything that I'm hearing, doses that are made available to clinics and hospitals are being used up quickly. So the second wave has scared people enough that the hesitancy has decreased. But right now, we're still struggling with vaccine availability. Vaccine hesitancy, the things that we can do to fight it is be very, very transparent about why we're vaccinating, how effective the vaccine is. Tell people, I think one of the key public health messages needs to be that you can still get COVID after getting the vaccine, but the chances that you will die from COVID are very, very low. So, you know, proactively message people that the vaccine isn't 100% effective against preventing infection, but it's very, very effective against preventing death. And the transparency is also very important. People have talked about, well, this is a new vaccine. We don't know whether it'll work, whether there'll be long-term side effects. So talk about the trials and tell them what we found in the trials. And also now we've given millions and millions of doses over the last 3 months. Talk about how effective the vaccines have been and the side effects that have occurred.
All right. Dr. Om Srivastava, member of the Maharashtra Task Force, is also with us. But I would like to go to Dr. Gyani first. Dr. Gyani, one of the things that have been observed, at least in these initial phases or the first few months of our inoculation drive, is that there are some areas where camps were organized and a particular type of vaccine was available, that is either Covishield or Covaxin. But then people were due for a second dose. And then, unfortunately, the other dose was kind of available right next to them. And thus, there have been many instances, some reported and some have gone unreported, of vaccine cocktails, of vaccine being mixed. Now, how big an issue of concern is this going to be, especially when we'll add so many different vaccines? There'll be, you know, many more instances of mixing. So is mixing okay or not okay?
Now, so far, the mixing is not supposed to be okay because no study has been done, and Dr. V.K. Paul has already announced that no mixing should be done. That is one point. The second point is that this problem has happened in the month of May only, because where the vaccines was garnered mostly by the big hospitals only, and that's why the smaller hospital, which were the vaccinating centers earlier, they did not have any vaccine. So that is where, you know, the people were not able to get the vaccination done. I will just add on a small point here on hesitancy, that 15% of healthcare workers also have not taken vaccination till today. And our own survey by HPI is that 30% of Indian population, even if you give them free, there is a hesitancy. So we are suggesting to the government that you must open up the next door nursing home concept. They will be able to convince the community to go for the vaccination. And that is where your point was very important when we were discussing with Dr. Arora, that vaccination should be given at the smaller centers. I will also add one point here, that because of our persistence, government now has issued the guideline that now the even 25% vaccine doses to the private sector will be channelized, coordinated through the state, so that the state will make sure that the smaller hospitals also are getting their due share. So there's a new change which has been announced yesterday, and that will come into effect from 21st June.
Yes, interesting. Yes. Dr. Gyani, you know, because the problem is, and I spoke to a lot of top doctors from these big hospitals who said that out of the goodness of our heart, we want to contribute towards the society. It may have been genuine also. They say that we'll buy the vaccines because we've got the purchasing power. And then we'll, as part of our corporate social responsibility, hold camps, go into rural areas, help people. It all sounds good. But do you fear that there is a possibility in the private sector of vaccine hoarding as a consequence?
You see, the big hospitals have all good intention. They are also our members. But, you know, their presence is only in Tier 1 and Tier 2. So let us not forget Tier 3, they do not have any presence. And rural area, not at all. And that is where this mismatch is coming. And that is why this needs to be corrected.
Okay. Dr. Srivastav is also with us. Dr. Srivastav, you're a member of the Maharashtra COVID Task Force. Can you tell us what are the practical issues that you are facing apart from availability? Because we obviously know that that is a major concern. Apart from that, what do you think can possibly stop us from achieving this target? If we were to 100% achieve vaccination for all by the end of this year, what apart from availability needs to be done?
So, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. What apart from availability are going to be the biggest challenges? Well, you know, there is going to be a little amount of hoarding, as we've already discussed. There is also going to be a little bit of wastage, pilferage, theft. There is also going to be some amount of hesitancy. When you're opening a batch of a vaccine which has got two doses, you're able to use only one. The next one has to be used in 24 hours time and has to be stored at 2 to 8 degrees or even lesser than that. Then there is going to be the human element where you may not always be able to keep that vaccine in that way. And that when you're not able to do that, you're going to find that one set of these vaccine doses will get wasted. So, you know, all of these are going to be, we are probably looking at very specific watertight compartments. We probably need to look at it from the point of view of the human element, the human factor, and what impact that is going to have. Because a lot of the people who are going to be handling these vaccines in wherever you say in a tertiary care hospital or a public hospital or a primary healthcare center or a vaccine center, all of these people are going to be having the human element. You are never going to be able to minimize that down to the last 1% of whatever it is, whether it is storage or it is wastage or it is pilferage or combination of all of these things. So those are going to be our challenges. We are going to find that the total amount of vaccine doses that are not going to be made available in spite of them being procured and kept in a particular center, those places are going to feel that they are going to lose those about 20% or 30% of their doses, and you will have to reclaim them or regather them or get them to be reaccumulated and given over that much of time. So if your target for a vaccine drive is December, I think you probably need to be preparing for March to May of next year for you to be meeting your targets, which is what is going to be.
Oh, so you're being realistic. So you're basically trying to tell the government, be realistic.
I think that if you're not realistic, you're only going to be disappointed. You'll be disappointed.
But Dr. Srivastava, we can't wait that long. The third wave is not going to wait that long, no. The sort of timeline you're giving.
Long, but you still need to be able to preparing for it. You need to be able to say, okay, this is my target population. These are the people who are the most important. Hmm. I need to be giving these many vials of vaccine. I need to be doing it between now and, say, September or October. You need to add to that the possibility that it may not be September, it may be December. But unless you do that, you're probably looking at May of next year.
Okay. Very quickly, Dr. Krutika, you know this 4 points that have been mentioned by Dr. Srivastav, apart from availability, what are the challenges that we can face? Pilferage, wastage, hoarding, as well as hesitancy. Now, hesitancy we are dealing with. How are we dealing with the others? You know, there was this very glorious and celebrated Kerala model where the Kerala government was using that little extra vaccine also in the vial and vaccinating people. So they had vaccinated more people than what they were supposed to. Do you think that formulas like these are going to help us?
Sure. I think things like that can be helpful. I think, again, having a good logistics plan is going to be helpful. So you can make sure that you're vaccinating people as efficiently as possible and making sure that you're not wasting vaccine. So I think making sure that you have good plans to ensure that you're maximizing the amount of vaccine that you're using so that you're not wasting shots of vaccine. You're not opening vials unnecessarily and only using half of the doses of the vaccine. All that's really important to make sure you're not wasting and you're vaccinating everybody as quickly as possible. So again, that goes back down to planning and logistics of your vaccine rollout.
And if you believe the government, they say that they started planning way before the vaccine even existed or was still in trial phases. So if they say that they've planned, then it'll be very interesting to see that plan play out post the 21st of June. Dr. Sampat Kumar, you know, if you were to give suggestions right now, obviously a Herculean task like this cannot be done, has to be spearheaded by a central authority or a federal authority. But then you need the support of one and all, not just state governments, but private players, one and all. Do you think, you know, in your wisdom, do you see us in India doing the same? And any global examples that you would like to cite?
So, you know, like Dr. Arora was saying earlier, if there's one country that can actually pull it off, it's India, because we have so much experience with these large-scale vaccination programs like the polio program. And I think he said it's different with children and adults. I think in some ways it's easier to get adults to these vaccine centers than children. So I think that shouldn't be as much of an issue. I think that there are a lot of things that we've learned, including, like you said, involving everybody. So wastage of vaccine, for instance, the public should be aware that they may show up, they may have an appointment, but if they're the last person of the day and you have to open a new vial for them, they may be told to come back the next day. So they should cooperate with that rather than run the risk that you may waste doses by opening a vial at that time. So having the public cooperate with that. And then using some formulas for vaccine wastage, sites that have too much vaccine wastage. I saw that in some states, the wastage was as high as 17 to 20%. Looking into those reasons, because right now availability is the biggest issue. And you're absolutely right. In the U.S., we managed to get sometimes 12 doses out of a 10-dose vial. And vaccine manufacturers always overfill. So anticipating that and making plans, especially right now when vaccine is still being given through appointments, you can easily plan for those things. Some body should be monitoring these metrics. And again, you need to be transparent about the metrics, how much wastage there is, how many doses you were allocated, and how many you used up each week so that you can reallocate vaccine to the areas where there's more demand move it out of areas where you're not having as many takers.
Dr. Girdhar, I want to come to you on the possibility of a booster shot. I mean, if Dr. Srivastava is to be believed, and if we are supposed to be realistic, this drive if you've planned for December, may end up getting completed by, if you're planning for December, it may end up getting completed by May. By then, will we not be in a position where the initial recipients of the vaccine may need a booster shot? After all, the vaccine is not going to last forever, no?
Yeah. One small point I will add here, a previous discussion. We are making one big mistake. Vaccination is not simply injecting vaccine. It is a complete process, procuring, storage, logistic, minimizing wastages, cold chain, lot of things. This training was done only once on 16th January, let me tell you. It has not been repeated after that. We must make sure that all the vaccination center, all the staff, they must be trained. There is a four-hour training module available online, which must be done to minimize
the
problem.
An important point you're mentioning. Can you repeat this? You're saying that the training process for carrying out an inoculation drive like this was done only once.
16 January by Government of India, and after that it has been left to the centers. That the way they want to do it, it must be formalized, because there are a lot of missing component, very important component. One of the component in the training is also how do you engage with the community. So this package we are now trying to emphasize to the government must be repeated, and we have discussion with the NSDC, National Skill Development Council, only yesterday, that this module must be, you know, given to all the centers free of cost. So that is the one aspect. Now coming to your question, this vaccination, we have covered only 20% population, if I strictly speaking, 45 years and above. 40% population of 18 to 45 is undergoing. And then, of course, children are going to come, which will be another, 20% population. So this process is going to end up by December 22. And by the time, surely, by the time studies will be over, that whether the efficacy is 9 months, 10 months or 1 year. But in any case, it will not be more than 1 year. So we will be coming up with a booster dose, definitely. So really, we need long-term plan. In fact, I must tell you, there are agencies approaching our association that they can get you 100 million J&J vaccine for us. Now, we are in a fix, I said. We cannot do it. Let us consult government. But it looks, there are now agencies already coming into the market to say that these vaccines are available. For example, Sputnik, they are saying directly available from USSR. We are really not sure. So we are going to engage with the government that if this vaccine is available through some other sources, should association get into that dialogue? But to answer your question, definitely we have to be prepared till December 22, not 21.
Okay, and a booster shot is required, which means that all the frontline warriors who got it in January and February, And if this inoculation drive goes on till May, you will have to start this chain reaction. By the time you finish one, there will have to be a booster shot for the first for the first phase people.
Our wish is that if we can get a single dose vaccine, like J&J and the light Sputnik, something like that, if comes, I think our job will be much easier.
Okay. I think the government is working. Let's hope they're listening and planning. Thank you very much. I would request Dr. Srivastav to please stay back. And thank you very much to all the three of you, Dr. Kritika, Dr. Girdhar, as well as Dr. Priya, for joining us. So a lot of questions are asked by people around COVID vaccination. Some of the questions, as you saw, we were addressing in this program. But the most basic of those questions, we have Dr. Srivastav, who's still with us. There are some basic questions. For instance, how safe is the vaccine that is available as of this moment? So let's go across to Dr. Srivastav and ask him this. You know, Dr. Srivastav, on Google, one of the most popular searches done by people is on the safety of the vaccine, whether it is safe or not. I want to ask you, what will you tell these people? While most in the urban areas are convinced, they read more, they hear more, there are many people who hesitate largely because of its safety.
Yeah, okay. So that's again a very good question you're asking. If you just look at most of the most recent vaccines in the last 10 years' time, all right, by and large, if you have calculated for the potential adverse reaction of the kind of protein that you're injecting to combat a particular kind of a viral infection, by and large, most vaccines are reasonably safe. Their incidence is in single digits of complications. Some of the complications may be grievous, but otherwise they are by and large pretty simple, pretty safe vaccines, and that they don't have long-term side effects. Now, that may not be the case for every vaccine. And now that we are dealing with the COVID-19 vaccine, which has got multiple mechanisms, there are multiple vector-borne mechanisms, there are messenger RNA mechanisms, there are other frozen mechanisms. So we don't know enough about the vaccines for COVID-19 at this time, and that it may actually be going through processes whereby we'll probably find out that these are the consequences of the vaccine, maybe in who knows, maybe in a couple of years' time, or 3 years or 5 years' time. But if you were to ask a simple question in yes or no, is the vaccine safe at this time, I would have to say yes. Based on the evidence available at this time, it is safe. However, I'd like to draw your attention to some of the vaccines that were developed in the last about 5 years' time in other parts of the world, in parts of Southeast Asia, in Vietnam, in Cambodia, in other parts of Southeast Asia, where it looked like they were going to be very safe. The dengue vaccine, when the first set of information came out, it was supposed to be really safe. In less than about 3 months' time, the side effects of the vaccine came out, and that while it was still being going through that phase of its trial, it was decided that it is no longer safe to even continue the trial. So these things happen. It is impossible to say how one mechanism of a vaccine is going to be completely safe or partially unsafe.
No, but then that is why, Dr. Srivastav, you've got agencies like the Drug Controller General, which studies all the data, which scans all the data, and then arrives at a conclusion.
See, all the things that you have just mentioned are evidences on paper, right? When you say that you've got a vaccine that you're giving to a patient who is actually infected, you've got a patient with COVID-19 who's infected, you're giving this vaccine to somebody who's got the COVID-19. That is going to be a very different kettle of fish as to what might be a trial candidate, what might be a person who has volunteered and said, okay, I will take the vaccine, I've got a variant. So vaccines are never given to those people who are acutely and grievously unwell.
Sure.
The person you pick for a trial is somebody who's got the mildest form of the disease.
Let me ask you the next question. Yeah, Dr. Srivastav, there's another question on the effectiveness of the vaccine. Now, suppose if a vaccine is very safe, but if it is not effective, then it's useless, no? So on the vaccines that are available as of this moment, data clearly shows that they seem to be effective. People who have been vaccinated are not getting infected as much as those who haven't taken the vaccine.
So again, let me draw your attention to something else that we are seeing. Of the two vaccines that are available in India for COVID, in one of the vaccines, there appears to be a mechanism that is called the immune escape. That means after the second dose of the vaccine, people are getting COVID. It's not as grievous as it was. Had you not taken the vaccine, but it is still there, and that it is a different presentation. Right, so how effective is it? Look, all of the data that we're talking about is less than 18 months old. 18 months, to my mind, is not enough time for you to draw your own inferences and conclusions and say, look, I think that this is the evidence that is available. Now, whether you call that the safety or the efficacy or the ability to make antibodies, make neutralizing antibodies, continue to be in a patient system for 3 years or 5 years, we don't know any of these things. And anybody who pretends to say that, yes, we know it, is only a paper tiger who seems to think that this is there because there is some evidence that is present on paper. I'm sorry, I could have said it in a less harsh way, but this is an important
aspect. You're entitled to your views, Dr. Srivastav. And very nice of you for having come here and address these issues. But thank you so much. I'm sure you too would encourage people to go out and get vaccinated, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would. I would, yes. I would encourage them to go out and get vaccinated so that we have even more data about the safety and the efficacy of the vaccine. And I hope that the vaccine is going to be the game changer in a condition like COVID, whether it is the first wave, the second wave, do remember
Correct.
That the virus is actually changing every 11 days. That is what we know for sure. Every 11 days, there is some genomic transformation of the virus.
Correct.
And what the virus is going to do at the end of 2 years or 3 years, with or without the vaccine, is something we don't know anything about. So I do hope that for the overall safety and the larger good of the general public being safe, I hope that as many people who can take the vaccine will have taken the vaccine in the shortest possible.
Dr. Srivastava, thank you so much for joining us. With that, we come to an end of this broadcast, but news continues on the other side. Stay with us.